Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Stephanie L. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today is Thursday, February 1st, 2024, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are on page XXXI in the doctor's opinion. We're going to read the third full paragraph beginning with, "His alcoholic problem was so complex," ending with, "if even that would have any effect." We are reading and commenting on just one paragraph this morning. Today's readers are Sherry Z, who will be reading the text, Lois P, reading page 164, and Kara L is our backup reader today. Newcomer greeter is Sherry M, and the announcements will be Leslie M. The reference ID number for yesterday, Wednesday, January 31st, 2024, is 21091 or 21091. And today's 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21093 or 21093. OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition stage, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Lisa W. to please read the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning. I'm Lisa W. from California, a compulsive overeater in recovery. These are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me share.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa W. And I will now ask Patty F. to please read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Hi, this is Patty F. in Massachusetts, a compulsive overeater. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. OAs and Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Patty F. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you please keep your sharing to the topic and the literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. Requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to re-mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're in the doctor's opinion. We're on page XXXI. Third full paragraph, or that bottom paragraph there, begins with, his alcoholic problem was so complex, ending with, if even that would have any effect. We are reading and commenting on just one paragraph this morning. And I will now ask Sherry Z to please begin reading.
Good morning, visionaries. Thank you, Stephanie, for your service and all who do service on this meeting. We are in XXXI at the bottom paragraph. I'm Sherry, recovered in rainy Southern California. His alcoholic problem was so complex and his depression so great that we felt his only hope would be through what we called moral psychology, what we then called moral psychology, and we doubted if even that would have any effect. So just to give you context, we're in the three paragraphs about the story of Fitz Mayo. And if you want to read his full story, it's on page 208 through 218 in Our Southern Friend, where he gives the first-person version of what happened. But this story is the second experience at the end of the doctor's opinion, not to confuse you all, and we're in the middle of it saying, in fact, that this is the most hopeless. This guy went into a barn to die. And they even doubted if it was even possible because his depression was so great that this spiritual concept, this idea that we would look at our defects of character would get him to stop drinking. What's ironic and not stated in this paragraph is that Fitz Mayo was the son of a minister. And when they were writing the book, he was so committed to the spiritual principles that he fought so hard that everything in the book should be about God. Bill was in the middle, and Ruth and Hank were on the far left. And from that conflict, we get this understanding of God as we understand him, as we know in the book. But what's so powerful about this paragraph, and I hope I haven't lost you guys in the history, is that at the beginning, there are moments that we feel it is entirely hopeless. And I felt that. I felt that I was going to live with 85%. I was just hopeless. I was one of the very few. And Fitz Mayo teaches us that even the very hopeless, the one that goes into a barn to die. Now, I never went into a barn to die But the one who's like, I'm just going to sit with my food in front of the TV and isolate because that's my only recourse, even that person can recover. So this book is about, you know, do I feel as they felt? Do I identify in? And you may not identify with Fitz being in a barn and committing suicide, but I can tell you I identify with feeling incredibly hopeless. And if Fitz could be recovered and then be the one that would be so vehemently pro the program, especially God, then miracles abound and we don't know who's the next miracle. And that could be you. So for the newcomer, may this be a message to you that today could be your miracle because it's happened for me and it's happened for so many others. So thank you for letting me share.
Well, thank you so much, Sherry Z. Well, we are now going to open up the meeting for sharing. Although we value your experience, we ask that you please limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So if you share it on Tuesday or Wednesday on any vision meeting, please allow others the opportunity to share today. We also ask that you please keep your share to 3 minutes to allow time for as many people as possible to share. I'll remind you with the timer when your time is up. When you hear the timer, please finish up as soon as possible. I'm going to ask for first names, last initials, and where you're calling from. So who would like to share on this paragraph?
Kara L., California.
Gotcha, Kara.
Liz E., UK.
Gotcha, Liz.
Thank you.
If anyone else would like to get in on this first round? Got plenty of time. All right, well, while you're all thinking about it, we'll just go ahead and get started with Kara L., followed by Lizzie. Kara, you're up.
Thank you, Stephanie, the Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. You know, this paragraph, I've read it several times, and I always, you know, reading it through before I had a spiritual awakening, it was always like, oh, poor guy, you know, and it almost seemed kind of fantastical, right? And then the further, you know, on further inspection or reading it later many different times, I realized that I do identify with it in that I had to come to the point that I realized I was hopeless, that I was out of ideas to fix my problem. You know, because I always, even though I worked the steps, even though I had been in program for 15 years, even though I had done everything that I was told to do, I still held on to the thought that I could fix it. And I had to get to the point where I was like, I'm out of ideas. I can't fix this. Now, I wasn't in a barn, you know, thinking of suicide, but I was to the point of, I don't know, I'm going to have to try this letting it go, this moral psychology, as it says in here, the spiritual awakening where I just say, higher power, I'm out of ideas. I can't fix this. There's no right food plan. There's no right meeting. There's no right sponsor. There's no right anything. The only right thing is you. And I'm going to just let go entirely and trust, even though it seems so improbable that a power greater than myself that I could see, I couldn't quantify, I couldn't do those things. And I had to get to the point that I realized that I am a hopeless, compulsive eater. And my only solution is a power greater than myself. Once I took that step, that's when the miracles started really happening. And I'm grateful today. And thank you for everyone doing service. And with that, I pass.
Oh, thank you so much, Kara L. from rainy California today. Next up, Liz E. from the UK.
Hello, good afternoon, good morning. Thank you to everybody for doing service.
My name is Liz E. for Elegant in Bristol in Southwest England. So also, I just want to encourage any newcomers, any shy sharers, do that star one. I didn't want to do it, but I know I have to do this to keep my recovery today. And this is really fascinating few sentences. His alcoholic problem was so complex. I didn't know that I had a food problem, really. And it was only when I came to OA and heard my story repeated and repeated and repeated by all of you beautiful fellows. I now understand it to be very complex. And my mood, you know, really so depression, so great. Yeah, and I had a tendency to that this morning as well, I have to say. And that we felt his only hope would be through what we then called moral psychology. For me, what does that mean, moral psychology? It means a spiritual awakening. And for me, it's of the evolutionary type. I didn't have the big white light. The way I sponsor is I encourage my sponsees to think of three things they've learned today. And then if every month you learn about 90 things, and then, you know, in a year, you learn at least 1,000 things. And that helps track the faith that I have developed and the changes that I have experienced. And a sponsee was asking me today, and for me, a combination of this relationship with God and higher power is a building of faith. And I know that today, I cannot do a recovered life without my relationship with God and higher power. Sometimes I find it really difficult, and I've had some really bumpy times, and I don't know where God is sometimes, but he is always here. I just don't listen. I just don't tune in. I just don't turn that tuning button on the radio to the right station, to the God station. I kind of allow it to go to the disco music or something else. But I need to turn the dial right back to God. And through that, I will have a spiritual awakening. And with that, I pass. Thanks a million, everybody. Bye.
Well, thank you so much, Liz E. from the UK. All righty. If you're just joining us, let me fill you in on where we're at. We are in the doctor's opinion on page XXXI. Bottom paragraph. Begins with his alcoholic problem was so complex, finishes up with if even that would have any effect. We just read that one paragraph. We'd love to hear your experience, strength, and hope with that paragraph. Please give me your first name, last initial, please, and where you're calling from.
Liz A., California.
Got you, Liz. Who else would like to share?
Jo Marie, Nevada.
Hey, Jo Marie. Got ya.
Wendy M.
Okay, got you, Wendy. Anyone else want to get in on this lineup? All right, I've got Liz A.
Oh, Barbara W.
Barbara W. Got ya. All right. I'll pause for one more sec before I see if there's anyone else. Okay. I've got Liz A., Joan Marie, Wendy M., Barbara W. Please let us know your last initial, where you're calling from. We'll start with Liz A., followed by Joan Marie.
Good morning. My name is Liz A., and I am from Los Angeles. Thank you, Stephanie, and everyone for your service. Oh, let's see. This paragraph, it's short, but it also packs a punch. Okay, when I finally, after many relapses, surrendered, my depression was just unbelievable. I mean, I really just wanted to die. I wasn't you know, thinking of how I was going to do it or anything like that. But I just thought, okay, if I keep eating myself like this, I'm going to just, you know, kill myself. I'll eat myself to death. And that's how I felt. And, you know, I had to look up what they meant by moral psychology. And it says it's like moral development. And at first I was like, wait a minute. You know, when I came in, I thought I was a moral person. I didn't steal. I didn't go out and kill people. So, you know, I thought I'm a moral person. And then I found out that my problem is selfishness and self-centeredness, and that is the root of my problem. And that this moral development is a transformation to go from selfish and self-centered to selfless and self-sacrificing. And, you know, it's just incredible. We don't know how it works, but it just works. The other thing I wanted to add, just my experience, is one of the reasons I was so depressed is because I kept trying to do this food plan, okay? And I kept on relapsing. I kept on slipping ending up eating more of my quote-unquote yellow light foods. And one morning I woke up and I said, why am I making this more difficult on myself? If I don't eat the yellow light foods and they become red light foods, what can happen? Can I surrender to that? Why am I making it harder on myself so that I'm like dying of these cravings? And once I did that and I just said, for today I'm not having yellow light foods, I was able to stay abstinent. And the next day I did the same thing. And then I started working the steps again. And it was just such a miracle for me. And to go from selfishness and self-centeredness to selfless and self-sacrificing, that's huge. And that was my experience. So with that, I will pass. Thank you. Stephanie, you're muted.
I'm so sorry, everyone. I got kicked off, dialed back in, and didn't hit star one. So thank you, Liz A. from California. Next up, we've got Joan Marie M. followed by Wendy M.
Good morning. It's Joan Marie M. from Nevada, recovered. And you just made me laugh, Stephanie. I do things like that all the time. You know, it's just a word of encouragement because I don't like to share, and it takes a while and the nudging of my higher power, God, to get me to share. And I know that it not only helps me, but it helps someone else. So, and the part about depression, so great. I wasn't in a barn, but I was home. And I wound up taking substance that put me in the hospital in a coma for 3 days. So I know depression. And I remember I really could feel it. I could feel it so strongly. It was like someone threw a wet blanket on me and I couldn't move. And so there's hope in this program. And depression is lack of hope, hopelessness. And this program brings hope that if I can do it, a chronic overeater who had many relapses and finally got it into my core that I can't eat like a normal eater. I can't. There's foods that in my body ferment and turn to alcohol. And if they could give me a blood test, wow, it would be off the wall, because one time I even had near fatal car accident because I was so hungover from eating this sugars and white flours and all that kind of stuff, just stuff in my I was at work and I had a job where I could walk around and I would kept on going back to the room to get more and stuff in my pockets. I could not stop. And I realized I have a disease. I didn't want it. I didn't cause it. It is a disease. It's, and then the moral aspect, I thought I was a good Christian. I thought so. But the selfishness and the self-centeredness and me, and all of that kind of stuff. So now I do that nightly review so I don't get those build-up emotions. I put them out there, and somehow by doing that, it really does work. And I don't know how, but I know that it does work. And this program works, but I have to work it continuously. And with that, I pass. Thank you all for your service.
Well, thank you so much, Joan Marie M. from Nevada. Next up, we've got Wendy M., followed by Barbara W.
Good morning, Wendy. I'm recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Grateful. And Stephanie, thank you so much for your service. Everybody on the line, you know, I love when I hear this book is divinely inspired, right? Like, how did that happen? You know, how do these sentences even appear? And before I go into this particular one, just I love the words hidden, deserted, determined, and die. That caught my attention like nothing else. And somehow those words, I found them to be so sad, like, and so apt, you know, like when I went to rehab for the second time because I was suicidal. Yeah, I can relate to those words for sure, you know. And here's the thing, it says here, it says it was so great. His depression was so great, you know. And I was just thinking, you know, the only way God's going to get my attention is for my life and my problems to be so great. They've got to be really great because I'm very willful and I won't listen and I want to run the show. And so God makes it so. See, that's the thing about one of my favorite things, you know, in this book is my way of life, the way I am not just eating, but how I'm treating other human beings. My way of life will kill me and God makes it so. So God wants to get my attention. So it's got to be pretty severe. And it, yes, absolutely, going to rehab because you're suicidal is pretty severe. You know, so thank you, God, for making my problems so severe. And also, of course, my past is my greatest gift to another human being. You know, it's just a miracle how this thing works. You know, and then they talk about moral psychology. I always get tripped up by the words. I don't know what that means. But I do know what's promised is a personality change, right? A complete transformation, a rearrangement of myself. And again, I don't do this. God changes me. All I have to do, and if you're new, is just, all I have to do is just do the next indicated action, right? I'm having, you know, not a great day, let's say. I get to call you guys. And, you know, I do esteemable acts and I get esteem. You know, I call somebody and I hear what I need to hear. Thank you, God. You know, it's just action after action after action. That is what the program is. And it will guarantee change me. And yesterday, a miracle happened. I honestly was in a relationship that was severely bad for me. But more importantly, I was not the gal God wants me to be. You know, God has a plan. And if I'm in a relationship with a gentleman and it's not, and it doesn't allow me to be of maximum usefulness. It doesn't allow me to be, you know, happy, joyous, and free. I need out, but I can't get out. Anyway, yesterday, God got me out. It was a miracle. Thank you, Lord. Keep coming back for everybody. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Wendy M. from Colorado. Next up is Barbara W., and please let us know where you're calling from.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Barbara W., and I live in Washington State, and that's Pacific Time. Wow. Lisa and I wanted to plug into this is I actually did some, I've done lots of family history work, and I actually discovered that my great-grandfather's brother had gone to a deserted barn to die. And I can't help thinking of the remorse and the depression and the heaviness that man's life that resorted him to do that. And I, like many others that have shared, mine would be just being so enveloped in a, what I would call a binge, in my favorite, in quotes, my favorite binge food, which no longer are foods I eat, they would become my sustenance, and that would be in my, that would be that deserted barn where no one knows I'm there. And I can step away from the world and just, you know, cut myself off from everything positive and my family and everything else. And I can't imagine doing that. I'm 78 years old, and I've been gifted with a long life, and I'm grateful for that. And here I am. I'm nine months into a new abstinence after the many years I've been with this program. And thank God a deserted barn is not on my list of things I'd like to do or like to go there. I once lived in southern Utah for a few years, and I realized that I wanted to live there because then people would come there because it was so beautiful down there with the parks and national parks and things, and it did, it felt wonderful. But the best thing I can say about this, the final thing I can say about this, is that moral psychology to me would be, I agree that it should be transformation for me. It's that all of my thinking that was once thinking I was worthless and had no purpose in this life, and why would anybody want to know me, and how come I don't have a best friend, and what's wrong with me? And instead, I'm continually re-accepting myself as God would see me, and that's the highest form of existence I can think of. And with that, I pass.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara W. from Washington State. And we can get another lineup. Please give your first name, last initial, and where you're calling from. Who would like to share? Quiet group this morning. Well, just in
Yvonne. Oops.
I hear a voice.
Sorry, Yvonne A. from BC, Canada.
Thank you, Yvonne.
Luann C.
Luann C.
Maureen A.
I heard Maureen, I believe.
Yes.
Was that an A, Maureen?
Maureen S. as in Sam.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Elizabeth A.
And I thought I heard a male voice in there.
Jan C. from Arizona.
And was there a male voice that tried to get in there? Okay. We can probably take one more.
Did you get Jan C. from Arizona?
I've got you, Jan. Was that a C or a B?
C is in Holt.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Anyone else want to get in on that lineup? All right. I've got Yvonne A, Luann C, Maureen S, Elizabeth A, and Jan C. Yvonne, you're up first, followed by Luann.
Good morning, everyone. This is Yvonne A. in BC, Canada.
And yeah, you know, my eating problem seemed so complex to me. I struggled. I'm in my early 60s. I've only been in OA a couple of years. And so I fought that fight for so many years, so sure that every next thing that I tried was going to be it. That was going to be the thing that, that helped me. And I finally made my way to this program. It wasn't a 12-step program, but they talked about this concept of not eating sugar and flour. And I got a start there, but that still failed in the end as well. And so I wouldn't say, like, I didn't suffer from chronic depression, but the hopelessness of those times when I was in the failures, it was just overwhelming. And I thought, my gosh, like, what else is out there? Like, what else can I possibly do? And I heard in this other program that I was in that somebody had got their start in OA. And I had heard of OA many, 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 many decades before that. But I knew nothing about it. I didn't know what the 12 steps were. I didn't know this was a spiritual program. And so I thought, well, I've got to try it. I don't know what else to do. And I doubted if it would help. Nothing else had helped. I was so sure in the first year that, no, somehow this was all going to fall apart too. And now I had one little bobble in there. I restarted my abstinence state, but I'm coming up on a couple of years. Nothing I have ever tried before has worked for me the way this program has worked. And to think that, you know, once I put my alcoholic foods down, that was kind of the end of it. Yeah, I've got a weighed and measured food plan. I eat to it. But it's not about the food. If you had told me my solution to compulsive overeating was not going to be about the food, I would have thought you were crazy. I still think it's crazy sometimes. But this food neutrality thing, did not know that existed, did not know it was a thing, just thought that somehow I'd be able to white knuckle easier, better, longer. And so it has been an absolute blessing that I have doubted. I still wonder sometimes, it's like, is this going to last forever? And, you know, I really do believe that as long as I keep my hand in my higher powers, as long as I keep focused on working these steps, as long as I remember who I am, what I am, that this program can work for me. And so it's just an absolute blessing. And with that, I pass. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you so much, Yvonne A. from BC, Canada. Next up, we have Luann C., followed by Maureen S. Please let us know where you're calling from.
Thank you. I'm Luann, a recovered compulsive overeater in Boise, Idaho. Yeah, I wanted to check in today because today is 11 months of sanity around food and entire abstinence, and I'm just so grateful. And I just wanted to say to the newcomers that the answer to the main question you brought with you this morning is yes. Yes, you're going to lose the weight. But also, that freedom you're hearing on this line is the loss of guilt and shame and those dysfunctional behaviors that are so painful, and the gaining of a life that is so much better than what I had figured out. So I just wanted to say, I hope you hear something that makes you want to come back, because I have found that the solution is here. And it works. It really does. Thanks for letting me share. Have a great day. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Luann C., and congrats on 11 months. That's amazing. Luann's from Idaho. Next up, Maureen S., followed by Elizabeth A.
Thank you so much. Maureen here, recovering compulsive overeater. I so love the big book. It just speaks to my soul. I so resonate because my disease of compulsive overeating is the exact same disease as the struggling alcoholic who wanted to die inside of a barn. I don't have a barn, but I have spent many times just not wanting to live anymore. I never actually tried. Thank you, Lord. But I certainly felt that desperation and that just lack of hope, and just thinking, oh my gosh, am I always going to be obsessed with how miserable I am and how much I hate myself? And I would look in the mirror and just think, oh, you know. And through the spiritual side of going back to my higher power, I am looking in the mirror and thinking, no, I was created by my creator. And I don't look at myself and think, oh, you're disgusting. I used to have all these negative thoughts that would pop into my mind. And what amazes me is that when I'm in recovery through Overeaters Anonymous, by a miracle, those things are just taken away from me, which is a miracle because I can't really explain it, but I just love myself. It's just amazing to me. And for me, it's not about the food as much as it is about me giving control to my higher power. I cannot fix myself. I can't fix anybody, and I'm always perpetually trying to make everybody, you know, in the show do exactly what I want, although I didn't realize that when I wasn't in recovery. It's only when I'm in recovery, in these rooms, reading the big book, that I have any awareness of what I was doing when I was miserable. Now I can see how I just wanted everybody to do exactly what I wanted. And if the world would have done what I wanted, everything would be fine. Of course, that's a lie, because this disease fills our minds with things that are not true. It's our own self that is telling us stuff that is not accurate. But yet I would listen to that sick voice every single day. For I first stepped into OA, actually more than that, 27 years ago. And it took me a long time. When I would relapse, I would relapse for years at a time, not a day or a week, for a long time. So I really learned, if there's anybody new on the line, no matter what, even if you do pick up, even if you do relapse, don't leave the rooms, don't leave the program, don't leave the fellowship, don't leave. Had I learned that earlier, I think I wouldn't have gone years before I came back. But I never threw out my big book, which now I think is a little bit funny. I always put it way back in the corner of my desk, and I never threw it out. I know that the answer to my problem is surrendering and accepting the world as it is. This world is never going to be perfect because it's just filled with people just like me. And I have to, is that my timer? Oh,
that's your time.
Okay. So I'm just grateful to be here, and thank you so much. And thank you so much for the meeting, and bless everyone.
Before you mute, where are you calling from, Maureen?
Oh, I'm sorry. I am in New York.
Thank you so much, Maureen S. from New York. Next up, we have Elizabeth A., followed by Jan C.
Good morning. This is Elizabeth A. from Michigan. I am currently on the road driving from Florida by myself, which is part of this reading today. I do suffer from chronic depression, and winters in Michigan have become so increasingly difficult. And this was, what a stretch to be on my own for a good part of it. And just one day at a time, this program has created enough structure for me and God to do this, to stretch me, which is something I wouldn't have been able to do in my addiction and my disease and the chronic hell of using and trying to crawl back out. Boy, there's so much I relate, and it was a push for me to share. I don't love it, but, you know, I'm not here for me today. I'm here for God. I had a spiritual awakening many years ago and became a Christian, and it's been a slow climb. And what this program has done for me with that moral psychology, it has taught me through the 12 steps to live a way that I think is true with my higher power and my faith. My actions and my beliefs were so disparate, so opposite extremes. There's something in the big book, I think, that talks about being impossibly good, and that I had these ideals and I couldn't live up to them. But when I stay in the program and stay in the steps, I have a framework and I have directions that make my actions match more with my heart and head and my faith in the Lord. Yes, I've had suicidal times, climbing out of an addiction and all the trauma that had come with it. I've been in program since 1986, and I've had miraculous freedom from bulimia for binge purge, exercise purge, starve, restrict. I've had miraculous freedom for over 30 years, which is, to me, a gift. I was still a compulsive overeater, and so it took longer than to climb out of that. Just for today, I have over 7 years with a one-day break in my abstinence. And when I tune my heart to God, His voice allows these steps and to live this program. And so I have to have that quiet time, and I have to check in and keep my heart and head in recovery. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth A. from Michigan. And Jan C., you're up next, and we got 2 minutes. Jan C., if you could unmute. We can't hear you. Can anyone hear me?
You hear me now.
Well, I can hear you, Jan. Go for it. You got 2 minutes, friend.
Okay. Well, I'll make this quick. I am new to the vision meetings. This is my actual only fourth meeting. I just want to share that using the big book to work the steps is truly saving my life. Through abstinence, I am recovered. I felt tremendous depression in June. My husband was very ill and in hospice at home. And in June, I realized my head was very squirrely. Well, then I admitted I was into the confectionaries that I was serving him. Knew I couldn't do it. So I humbled myself and went to the 5:30 Scottsdale meeting, where I get to experience Harlan so frequently, and he's a great blessing, and many of you know of him. I heard a vision through that. I got a new sponsor. I listened to through the steps with her, listened to lots of special edition podcasts on each of the steps. And something I realized is that I thought I was a pretty unselfish person, but I am pretty selfish, and I like to give advice. But I'm really working on listening better. I'm able to set some boundaries for myself. And one of the miracles that has happened is that I was able to be abstinent and present for my husband through all of this. And he just passed away on the 17th and had a peaceful death at home. And I'm just really very grateful. If it wasn't for the program and reworking the steps according to the big book, you guys, and going to meetings, I would have been able to be present for him the way my higher power wanted. Thanks for letting me share.
Well, thank you so much, Jan C. from Arizona, and we're so sorry for your loss. And that is all the time we've got today. We'll now close the meeting with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And Lois P., can you please read A Vision for You?
Yes, thank you, Stephanie. Thank you for your service. This is Lois P., gratefully recovered in New York. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.